Allora, bene, sorry. Honorable members, our support team from the Parliament and all those that are watching our portfolio committee today, good morning. Today, after a marathon of meetings that we had last week, in which we were discussing the annual reports, starting from the public, Auditor General, all the opinions about the Department of Public Works and each entity, and then dealing with the reports from the department, the PMTE, IGT, CBE, CIPD, and AGRIMA SA. We had that marathon from Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And today we will be dealing with a report compiled on all those reports that we discussed. And then it will be our BRRR report as this portfolio committee, which will be tabled in the near future in Parliament. So our meeting may not be long because we will be looking at what we discussed and what we had and our observations. So we don't even have the department today. It's only us. I thought Nola won't be in the meeting, but she's here because she has sent me a correspondence indicating that she is writing her exams this week. So, but she didn't get someone, so she's here with us. We really appreciate such a commitment, Ms. Martinez, knowing full well that when you are writing, you need to concentrate on your studies, but you are here with us. We appreciate that. Honorable members, you are all welcome in the meeting. Do we have any apologies?
Recording in progress.
Do we have any apologies?
No apologies from my side, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Martinez.
Yes, Chairperson.
Honorable Jabo.
Good morning, Chairperson and members. I have an apology of Comrade Ma, Honorable Marshall.
Thank you, Honorable Jabo. Hope that you will note the apology of Honorable Marshall. Then can we then get the report?
Thanks, Chairperson. My colleague Shuaib will deal with the report.
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, members and colleagues. I just want somebody to indicate whether the screen is visible.
Yes, it is, Shuaib. Thank you.
Thank you. Chair, what we have in front of us is the draft budgetary review and recommendation report for this financial year. It reports on the activities of last week from 11 to 13 October. There are certain sections that are highlighted in blue just to remind myself that I want to say something about it. And then there are, as you see the screen currently, a blank side on the right-hand side, which are comments. That's also a reminder for us to just go through. This is just to assist us to go through it faster, as you indicated, Chairperson. So the assessment is based on an analysis of the strategic plan, the annual performance plan for this for the last financial year, the one that we are reviewing, and the quarterly performance reports for 21-22 financial year, and the audited financial statements as contained in the annual reports, and then, of course, our engagement with the AG on its findings. Chair, there's a few things we will highlight. I'm just trying to see why I can't page. Okay, we are fine. Just about the introduction, the standard introduction refers to the Section 5 of the Money Bills Amendment Procedure and Related Matters Act. The Money Bills Act says that it guides us around how we conduct reviews of the annual financial statements of departments and the entities. And it's quite specific, saying if required, we may issue recommendations on the forward use of resources. I highlighted this just to refer members, to refresh members' memories, my comment and guidance around the ability of the committee to actually identify specific resources that need to, in some cases, withheld, may need to be withheld. And remember that I said that we then need to be very responsible and identify the specifics of subunits and programs and specific amounts if we do so, which is why the money bills say if required, keeping in mind that there's certain specific technical and legal matters that we need legal hoops that we need to jump through to do that properly. It's also supposed to, we're supposed to submit these reports to the National Assembly after the adoption of the Appropriation Bill and prior to the adoption of the Medium-Term Budget Policy Statement. Now, members will notice that the MTBPS is indeed scheduled for soon, I think next week or the week after, and we are therefore on in time to complete our side of what the bill says we should, or the Act says we should do. But Chair, it's important for us as a committee to stress that this is not one event. It's a process of a chain of interlinked events throughout our five-year term. These are our weekly oversight meetings, visits to project sites, constituency activities that members undertake on their own, meetings with the Auditor General, including responses to questions that members put to the executive authority for written and oral reply. And so as support staff, we follow these and we include everything we learn about the department and its work in our analysis. So this report reflects on those responses that the department provided in such activities regarding its work. So the report is an instance of assessing in order to strategically flesh out further steps of how we can assist the department to accelerate improvement in its work. And not only the department, but the entities as well, because the department and the entities are the implementers of the policy that the minister makes. And in this way, this report is an assessment of the effectiveness and efficiency of the department's use and forward allocation of available resources. And as we said earlier on, it says we may include recommendations on the forward use of resources. We usually do recommendations, but those recommendations are very often not necessarily on the forward use of resources, but definitely criticism and pointers for the department and entities to improve. I'm not repeating this section, Chair, because what I just summarized there is indeed that. We know the mandate of the department and the PMTE. It's part of Schedule 4, Part A of the Constitution that contains the functional areas of concurrent national and provincial legislative competence. And public works is one of those that is concurrent, where national, provincial, and municipal councils actually have the responsibility for public works. We must just note that some of these matters are not fully our core responsibility as a department. I'm not saying ourselves as part of the sector of this department's work. Kiyama is actually the mandate stating this department as the custodian of immovable assets and immovable properties of the all national departments. It provides construction, maintenance, and property management services to all client departments at national level. And in some instances, entities such as CIDB, CBE might rent or get free accommodation from ourselves, but that's because they're part of our sector. We also, as a department, the department also provides strategic leadership and regulatory guidance on the EPWP. I just want to highlight a few things about legislative mandate, the acts that form the legislative mandate. As we said, GIAMA, the Infrastructure Development Act of 2014, the CIDB Act, Council for Built Environment Act, and the six acts that regulate built environment professional councils. Those are the council, the Engineering Council of South Africa, SACAP, and the other BEPs, and then AGRIMAS Act and the TFMA that also guides ourselves. I highlight these because there will be reference to them later on. The following texts are important to remember. Those in blue are the ones that we will always say Program 4 of this department, Construction Research and Policy Regulation and Development, is weak in. The white paper, Public Works Towards the 21st Century, that was drafted in 97, and the white paper, Creating an Enabling Environment for Reconstruction, Growth and Development in the Construction Industry, 1999. I'm referring to that because these two acts require amendment, taking in consideration some of what is in this, what we call White Paper 2, which is the 99 one. Then there's the Construction Sector Charter, Transformation Charter, the Property Sector Transformation Charter. The Department of Human Settlements is also involved in some of these. And then DPW. In that case, DPW, but this counts for DPWI as well, broad-based Black economic empowerment strategy and the property management strategy on triple BEE, job creation and poverty alleviation 2007, and of course the green building framework. Now, while the department is not directly involved in service delivery, it provides for accommodation and maintenance services and construction services to those national departments that are actually at the core service delivery departments. Now you'll see the note that I made here. We must keep in mind that while this department is not, it plays a critical role. And if it's not doing well in terms of maintenance and construction, in other words, constructing things on time and within budget, then it actually negatively impacts on service delivery in courts, police stations, social development, SASA, the Department of Social Development, SASA payout points, etc. Our people must feel safe in these buildings and secure in these buildings. So they should not be dirty and unkept and not maintained. They should be beautiful and make ourselves feel proud of being South Africans. So the oversight function of this department, this is included. It was included in last year's report as well. The distinction between the executive authority and the DG as head official or accounting officer, and that the minister makes policy and the DG and his team is responsible for outputs and implementation, is accountable to Parliament for the management of the implementation and the budget. Which is part of the explanatory memorandum on the divisions of responsibility in the PFMA. So levels of oversight, apologies, this blue is quite light here, but this is just a fleshing out of what the DG is supposed to do. The PFMA is a very interesting act that actually has in sections of it, specifically section 39-40 onwards. I always refer to that as part of the contract of the DG with the government. And the reporting responsibilities outlined in 40 of PFMA makes it very clear, and you'll notice this in the annual financial statements, the Auditor General refers to these as well, that the DG and the senior management team must ensure full and proper, and I say and the senior management team because the DG is only able to account fully as an accounting officer if the others do their work. full and proper records of financial statements must be kept. And it must be kept according to prescribed norms and standards that Treasury makes. And at various times during the financial year, it must be submitted to the Auditor General for auditing. There should be a comma there. National Treasury, the Minister, and to Parliament. Now, that is a very important aspect of Section 40 because it underscores the work of this committee, except for the Money Bills Act, saying we should do it. PFMA actually also guides and says the DG must report to us as the second level of oversight. And the Auditor General functions as what we can think of as a third level of oversight. That doesn't mean they come third. The AG actually walks the path with the department all the way and assists the DG in his orders, in his or her oversight responsibility. The AG and ourselves deliberate on matters that may need attention, but we've said that in this year, in our deliberations with the AG, that this should become, and it's a sort of a verbal agreement that we made, that there should be a more regular interaction between the AG's technical team and the committee's technical team, but also between the AG as an office and the committee. And this must be quarterly or biannually, and we can work out in our schedule how we do that. A useful thing about the BRRR is that in our recommendations, instead of just going forward planning in terms of resource allocation, this committee actually uses this, and that's why we say it's a chain of interlinked events. This event of the BRRR is actually part of our strategic forward planning. The components of the oversight focus is firstly on the minister and how the minister makes policy as a policy leader. And we need to check whether and how the minister direct the DG and the senior management team to research, to review, and to draft policy and regulation. And I highlighted this on purpose because that's the function of Program 4 that is very weak. And those white papers I referred to upstairs there, pages previously, those are the things that need to be strengthened over many years now. And we actually do not have one single public works mandate stated in the Public Works Act. The members and the chairperson can guide this team as to how we should strengthen that aspect and assist the department. The second focus is on how policy needs that the minister stated has been translated into programs that are funded by this department. This, in the APP and the 5-year strategic plan is often described in there, and the APP includes predetermined objectives and the targets and KPIs that should indicate whether those targets were reached within stipulated timeframes. And then the third focus is on whether and how the minister guided the DG and administration to develop uniform standards and regulations that guide implementation. In the whole sector. Now, when we say sector, we must understand that this department is actually integrally involved in the work of the private sector as well. The CIDB deals with contractors who are private businesses registered there to do construction on behalf of the department and maintenance on behalf of the department. What did I just do now? And so we must understand that some of our work actually goes into private sector, which will later on find resonance, if members will remember, as I continue our work around the public partnership. Public-private partnerships and the work of the Infrastructure South Africa. And so that aspect is important to ensure that that allocated budget for this financial year, we reflect on the past one, but for the future one as well, is used efficiently. And the Section 40 of the PFMA is very clear, but section 217 of the Constitution is also very clear that we talk about the efficient use and not the wasteful use of resources that are allocated. So if we want to summarize all of that in one sentence, the committee keeps the minister as leader of the sector responsible for the use of budgetary and human resources to ensure optimal performance of the DG and the senior administrative team, but the team as a whole. The evidence that we used is, has already been alluded to. I refer to the five-year strategic plan, the APP, and the oversight events. These are the things that I mentioned in blue earlier on, and I'm just paging past the lower sections of that section. For section 3, the alignment of the legal mandate and planned initiatives as stated in planning documents, we have dealt with that. But here I just want to insert something that's important to remember. And we always do not remember. We don't always keep it in mind as we work with the department. The department, as the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure, infrastructure and public works is a defragmented spatial planning and land use management terrain. And this five-year administrative term places emphasis on infrastructure investment. It was introduced in 2019 in the State of the Nation, Andreas, and referred to as a critical area of investment that supports structural transformation, growth, and job creation. And it fitted the president practically fitted that whole thing into the NDP and Vision 2030. We are behind with those targets, and therefore extraordinary measures is required to realize Vision 2030. Now, the reason why I raise this is that the decentralized nature of how government is organized into national, provincial, and municipal levels, and then the municipal level also into district and local municipalities. This is a very defragmented terrain, and it's further fragmented because of the way in which power works, the way in which politics works, and the contestation within local government and the construction sectors. And I don't like the reference to construction mafias, because this has evolved into very formal structures that we as a committee may need to very respectfully deal with, rather than just referring to them as mafias and gangsters and make them out to not be part of the mainstream. We should actually involve them in these things as well, and in policymaking and implementation. So role players are busy in a defragmented field. When things are defragmented and not unified, the minister's work as a policy leader is more difficult. And our work as an oversight committee is more complex, more interesting, though. And therefore, we should more energy into understanding into understanding what it costs, what it means to manage infrastructure projects. In 2011, this problem of defragmentation was addressed by the institutionalizing of the PICC to unify infrastructure and public works function between different levels of government. And that's the reason why we have infrastructure included in the department's mandate these days. So we had a strategic planning session in which we dealt with this. We also had a meeting before that in which we dealt with the Infrastructure Development Act and how that may influence our oversight responsibility. Now, Infrastructure South Africa was then established inside of this department, and the DPWI is the lead, and it's correct. I think in the previous BRRR, we said this is correct that it is there as a component. Because the department provides policy formation, coordination, regulation, et cetera, to the construction sector that is involved in infrastructure. The department should enhance intergovernmental relations by coordinating concurrent public work functions as set up in Schedule 4 of the Constitution. It leads and directs EPWE at national provincial departments, and it promotes growth. So in a way, this department is one of those departments that should coordinate and unify in a defragmented sector. And We said these things in the previous report, that the coordinating responsibility for all public work infrastructure must be with us. The secretariat function is with the PICC, and inside Program 4 there is now a budgeted section for that coordinating secretariat function of the PICC led by the minister and the CEO of ESA. The infrastructure delivery management system, which is a system of processes with gateways, and members may remember that I presented FIBDIM, the Framework for Infrastructure Procurement Development and Management. My apologies. And that idea, that FIBDIM fits into the IDMS and into what we call the National Infrastructure Management System. And we've already, for this particular year, in the next term, scheduled a meeting where National Treasury, the DBSA, Development Bank of South Africa, and the Infrastructure of South Africa will come and present, so we can understand the attempt to unify in a fragmented sector. And here we repeat the strategic plan. ATP indicated that DPWI would play a more impactful role alongside the Infrastructure Investment Office in the presidency to structure and unify infrastructure-led economic growth under a single point of entry, et cetera, et cetera. And so the National Infrastructure Plan, we all know about the 100 billion fund and what it looks like, and what the pipeline of bankable projects meant. And that is something that we dealt with in the strategic session and fleshed out for the members. We go to the analysis of the budget and the annual financial statements. Now, I do not want to, and as I said in previous years, do not want to dwell much on this, just to say and to assure members that what we have in front of us here is the figures is uncontestable. We do not, this comes straight from Treasury. It comes from the adjustment, the final appropriation. We can see actual expenditures. We see the variance between the two financial years for each one of these programs. These are the resources. Now, if we, as I mentioned, if we, for instance, in construction policy have an issue and we say construction policy is not doing what it should do, then we should go straight to construction, property and construction industry policy research. And that's what I alluded to earlier on, that they're not doing well with the research portion. Now, if we go look at that research aspect, that tiny branch, then you'll notice, and you then have to go and look at the allocation in terms of how these employees are compensated. And it is there that you may then say, but you ask the question first, what have they done throughout every financial, also at this financial year under review? And is it justifiable? Is it an efficient use of salary for people who did not review the and this is just an example, the infrastructure, White Paper 1, 1997, and drafted a public works bill. The bill is very late. The bill had to be with us already prior to the expropriation bill, and it has not been with us. And so what I'm saying is that we would have to look at that and then make a recommendation with figures indicated as to what we say about that forward planning. There has been, as indicated, under expenditure in every single one. I'm just going up again. There has been under expenditure in every single one of these branches. Inez analyzed this. Our researcher, Ms. Stephanie, analyzed this for us, showed the spending, what the adjusted budget looks like, and the over expenditure and under expenditure indicated here. Under expenditure, compensation of employees, the reason given would always be in this type of language, due to delays in the filling of funded vacant prioritized positions and those vacated during the financial year. That's not enough for us to then say we need much more detail than this when we interrogate the department in order to make a recommendation on forward planning to get the department jacked up on specific sub branches. Program 3, EPWP, a lot of this gets transferred to municipalities and provincial and national departments. As we already know, non-state sector, et cetera, and then the social sector as well. And then property construction industry policy and research, this is the one I referred to earlier on, at 17 million compensation of employees, underspent by a total of 23.8, and it's made up of those three components there. Prestige is the one that I think there's also an issue specifically around prestige and the DG of the department that is supposed to manage the Parliamentary Village Board. Now, there's not been a financial statement for last few years, including this year under review, and it is something that the committee needs to give attention to, not only in terms of getting the governance of the Parliamentary Village Board sorted out, but the expenditure and specifically the issue around maintenance and security at these villages, because we do not want a disaster to take place. And we say we've referred to it, but we didn't refer to it more specifically. The environment amounts to 66,000 in this case. These funds were applied for these specific reasons. For program one, there's a net increase for households, offsetting higher than projected expenditure. I always find this a bit sad that if you project, then you project low and you spend more because you didn't plan properly. That's my assessment, is that it's only possible that something like this happens if you did not plan properly. We need much more specific detailed planning in order to stick to, to be able to project and do it properly. Unauthorized expenditure for the financial year, it opened at a balance of 261.2 million in unauthorized from 2017-18. Now, this matter of very old money that lies there, that's unauthorized, that was spent in an unauthorized manner. I think it was funerals, state events and funerals, and it was previously awaiting condonement by Parliament. We need to figure out what is the process of condonement and why has it not been done and who did not get this done. For me, this is part of where the DG as accounting officer needs to be addressed, needs to be stated. You need to act much more faster with Treasury as well as Parliament, SCOPA, the appropriations committees. Our committee is not a money committee. We make recommendations around the overall performance of the department and the entities, but this is one where this department, the leadership of this department, must do something and get this condonement done. Because if you start with 261 million over, unauthorized of previous years, then it starts adding up, and then you see the type of growth that you see here. So the total is going to increase. By the way, just the notes that Inez refers to here are the notes to the annual financial statement that explains these. Notes 8.2 and 8.3 provides the detail and why the economic classification of the under expenditure looks like that, unauthorized expenditure looks like that. It is something that must be addressed and addressed ASAP. It cannot be allowed to continue in that way. Just an editing thing I'm doing there. Chair and members, the human resources, I'm not going to dwell much on it. We're putting a diagram in here of the DPWI, PMTE, and ESA. Just to say that we put this here, members need to refer to this for preparation for the meeting that's coming up in the next few years, the next few weeks, as we're going to have ESA reporting with DPWI and ESA, as I stated here, that in November they will come to us where we will deliberate on ESA in the organogram, but also on the specific roles of the department, ESA, DBSA, Treasury, and their different roles that they play regarding the inception, the planning, the funding, working out the costing of the strategic infrastructure project that gets gazetted as bankable, once it's bankable, by the Minister of Public Works and Infrastructure. That is future work that we already set up. The annual report refers to 769 posts. 670 is filled as at the end of this financial year that we look at, with another 30 full posts positions that's additional to the organizational structure. The employment and vacancies are indicated, and reasons for vacancies that has been provided looks like as it is indicated here. I need to just look at the unqualified audit opinion. The department's opinion is unqualified. There's emphasis of matters and additional matters that goes back to 15-16 financial years. This is the seventh consecutive unqualified audit opinion, but note with emphasis of matters and additional matters. Now, those are old things, and some of them involve what I just referred to earlier on, where there's unauthorized expenditure that has not been dealt with yet. And I say that unqualified audit opinion cannot therefore be taken as good. Even if you start saying seventh consecutive unqualified opinion, yes, that is the case, but that does not mean that you do not give attention to emphasis on matter. It might mean that from the first to the seventh or the sixth consecutive unqualified, because it's unqualified audit opinion, the pressure has been taken off, and therefore those emphasis of matters continued from 15-16 to now. It shouldn't be there. It should be dealt with, and it should be completed so that each financial year starts afresh and clean. This is not correct. Some of the matters of emphasis are interesting to look at. Impairment of receivables, amounting 62 million. These are long outstanding debts which may not be recovered. 72% of total receivables. This is serious. It means that this debt is now going to be written off. 62 million. Leaving it, members can make up their minds on that. Details of fruitless and wasteful expenditure under assessment. It's not included in the main note, or is that main vote? I'm not certain. It might be main vote. 54.5 million was spent on behalf of the DBE in relation to the school beautification program. It's been referred to investigation subsequent to the year end. So this is after March. As a result, a statement made by Basic Education prior to the year end indicated that no school benefited from this program. That department indicated that it does not recognize any expenditure made by the department on its behalf in relation to this. Now, this is serious because it means that our department did something outside of its mandate and did so with some kind of undertaking which was not written down and cannot be pinned down by the PFMA or an MOU or a service level agreement. Not acceptable. The other matters is that the AG referred to the EPWP reported performance achievement that did not match evidence provided for the indicators in the APP. supporting evidence that were provided differed materially from the reported achievement. Now, these types of things might be errors, but it must be fixed. This has been dealt with previously. The EPWP, I must say, has been doing well in spite of this type of finding. The problem is just that the AG could not determine if the achievement of the 1 million, just over 1 million work opportunities as reported by EPWP in the EPWP report system by public bodies required further adjustment. So the EPWP reporting system by public, just the reporting system, is a software system used where verified numbers are sent in. And again, they also operate in a very defragmented, decentralized manner. Decentralization, defragmentation is not necessarily a bad thing. It could be a good thing, but it must be controlled in a coordinated way. And that's what EPWP RS is supposed to do. This matter can be fixed. It's not impossible. It's not something that should be there. The annual financial statements and the annual report, the statements submitted for auditing were not prepared in accordance with the prescribed financial reporting framework, section 41B of the PFMA. This is what I meant when I said the DG is guided by section 40, as I said, from section 39 onwards of the PFMA. Section 41B says that financial statement must be prepared for each financial year in accordance with GRAP, generally recognized accounting practice. Now, the AG found that it was not done, and therefore there's been material misstatements on current assets that's been identified by the auditors, and so it received an unqualified opinion. So these were corrected. So there were errors, but because they were corrected on time, the department received an unqualified opinion. If it was not corrected, it would have been a qualified opinion. Expenditure management, effective and appropriate steps were not taken to prevent irregular expenditure. Again, section 38 of the PFMA says there should not be irregular expenditure. It should be very quickly reported to the, once it's found, the DG should report it to the minister as well as the treasury as per regulation 9.11 of the PFMA. And the AG indicated that the majority of the irregular expenditure disclosed was caused by salaries paid to officials that were appointed irregularly per the Public Service Commission investigation report. This is well known by the members. We dealt with this matter, not only in the meeting, but previously as well. I think that's the matter also of that resulted in the suspension of the previous DG that has subsequently agreed to retire. The consequence management aspect, this must be strengthened. It is not strong enough. Disciplinary steps were not taken against some officials who incurred fruitless and wasteful expenditure. The PFMA section 38 subsections indicated the states that should be acted on, and there should be consequence management, even if it is just to say to people, you are weak in this aspect and that aspect, therefore we are training you at this university or at this technicon or at this banking institution for you to go through a course on GRAP. It's just an example that I'm giving. Disciplinary steps is not necessarily consequence management. Consequence management can also be the training of people to ensure that they are able to act and do their work better. Internal control deficiencies existed for many years. That's why I said, even though we have an unqualified opinion, it does not mean that things are good here. Modified cash standard, management did not adequately apply it. In the preparation of the AFS, it was not done, and management did not monitor adherence to the development audit action plans. Now, these are audit action plans. These audit action plans is what should prevent a negative audit opinion. So again, there are weaknesses here that needs to be addressed to ensure that we don't just stare at unqualified as if everything is okay. Everything is not okay, but must be dealt with. Again, consequence management is raised and lack of proper record keeping, not by, and this is what I meant by the EPWP branch actually doing well, but the EPWP RS as public bodies reporting, that aspect needs to be coordinated better. And this has to do with training, et cetera, in the defragmented and decentralized system in which the EPWP operate. Material irregularities, expenditure on state events. Honorable members, this is what I meant when I said that the condonement aspect is related to state events. Those three state events, prices quoted on the pricing schedule that was submitted by the supplier during the tender process in a very long, 2018, non-compliance that resulted in material financial losses. This is the type of money that in the end became that massive amount that now requires condonement. This is, I'm leaving this year, again, it's a matter that we discussed, and I think there is something that's put into the recommendation for members to look at that I will deal with just now. The Auditor General referred to, and I'm just going to go straight to the blue bullet. The AG followed up with the accounting officer around supporting evidence received on 31 August 2021 and 4 February 2022. Now, what we're referring to here is the previous year, the AG checking up, monitoring whether the audit action plans were put in place and whether all the corrective measures of the previous financial year were implemented. And it's good to see that this actually took place. So the acting DG, we had more than one acting DG, those acting DGs and CFOs and heads of PMTE in this case, I think it is, they need to be congratulated and commended for following up and putting in place these 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 actions because there has been action on their part as they promised, which includes, by the way, the review of state official and provincial official funeral policy manual, the cost norms and standards document that has been drafted that guides that so that we do not have what happened in 2018 and in previous years with state events where people price and then they get paid higher than what agreed to. So the department in the second last bullet started, and this is why I paused earlier on this matter. The department has commenced with the process of recovering the overpayment of 825,832 from this company called Side Productions, should be PTY, apologies, limited by the state attorney. And the department is embarking on buying it. So that last bullet is not related to that particular point. But I'm saying that aspect, we can see that matter is being actioned. We just need to follow up on that with the AG as well. So this is part of what I say we should commend the acting DG and as accounting officer and the previous acting DG has been taking appropriate steps to address the material irregularities. These are some of the matters. Again, the first bullet refers to 2018. The second bullet refers to what resulted in the loss of 9.1 million because Treasury Regulation 8.11 was not followed and internal procedures and internal control measures did not identify or prevent those payments mentioned. So the accounting officer, the acting DG, was notified of this on 2nd September 2020. Appropriate actions committed in response to the notification provided 7 May are being implemented. So that is good that action is taken on that matter. The management conducted its own investigation in that matter. It's been finalized in March 29th, and that is sorted out, and it will be dealt with, including the additional irregularities related to the funerals. The department opened a case for civil recovery against the supplier, and that's the case number, and it also will be investigated by the SIU, who started, actually it was referred on the 18th of September. The SIU commenced, therefore, and it's indicated that a civil claim will be initiated. So this is all related to that matter. The funerals is referred to, and whose funerals it's been, and what the amounts are for each one. Treasury was notified of the supplier, and so I want to conclude that matter and then just go to other reports and investigations. The AG highlighted investigation on procurement fraud and irregular payments allegations, and this relates to transport companies responsible to transport members and learners to and from the parliamentary villages, parliament and schools. The investigation was concluded in the current financial year. 6.7 million fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And I'm sorry, the first bullet is not related to this amount I just referred. That first investigation on fraud and irregular payments allegations has been concluded in the current financial year. If members need information, we need to request that. The second bullet has to do with one military hospital, where 6.7 million was incurred as fruitless and wasteful expenditure for a project repairing, I think, electrical engineering work on the first floor, and which was completed and paid for, and then had to be redone and paid for again. So that matter was ongoing when the year end occurred, and therefore it will be dealt with, something that we have to deal with in the new financial year as well. The PMTE, established already in 2006, operationalized in 2014, but I want us to understand that the PMTE is not operationalized as has been envisioned. Especially National Treasury would say the PMTE is not operationalized properly. If it was operationalized properly, the PMTE would make money that would go into the fiscus, and it would not draw so much money from Program 4 of this department. To fully realize its function, the entity needs a full contingent of qualified, experienced property maintenance, information and communication technology, construction project and contract management specialists. We put that ICT in there because the software Archibus and Sage that should work well together has been purchased, has been rolled out, some modules of it, but remains incomplete. And we hold it that there's not a consistent of ICT people inside the department that can do the work with the private contracted software company. The PMTE is not fully operational. It struggles to properly manage the Government Immovable Asset Register as per the GIAMA, the Government Immovable Asset Management Act. And so since 2014, it achieved some progress, but it does not have required staff. It has some of that staff, but it doesn't have it properly spread through to take the pressure off. But it's also struggling because of the regional offices headed by regional office managers, 11 of them spread across the country that actually do the real work of the PMT. There isn't therefore proper control from a head office in the main metropolitan areas and rural areas. So there's a serious problem that needs addressing in terms of how to deal with defragmentation and decentralization, which work, but should work, but should ensure a good footprint, but it does not, in this case, assist us. The budget, as indicated for the 6 programs, and again, if we want to make changes, we need to understand the specifics. This particular one is a worry for me because of the 70% spent at the end of the financial year, and that construction project management is actually quite weak. It is one of the sub-branches of the PMTE where we need not only the leadership that are qualified planning and project management and property specialists, but also the rest of the staff. This specific one, this branch, this low percentage here has to do with the immovable asset register. This branch manages the immovable asset register. And so this branch and that branch together do the, in fact, 3, 4, and 5 work together with facilities management that also did not do a proper expenditure. Now, what I'm referring to here is this low percentages for 2021. And then if we look at 2022, it went slightly up in the case of real investments, real estate investment services. But note, this one did not come up much, and facilities management seems to do very well. This one seems to have improved tremendously, information registry services, and that is good news for us. And this is just looking at the percentage of expenditure. That does not say, expenditure doesn't on its own say that everything worked well and is well. The totals are indicated. Allow me to just shift that slightly, and there we go, that looks better. Let's save the document so that table stays proper. So I'm not going to go through the analysis because I've already did a bit of an analysis of what is worrying us. Let's just look at, I think this is the, this is construction project management project. Program 3. So some of what I said has to do with these bullets, these 5 bullets here, and the reasons are reasons as given by the department. We are not impressed with that. REMS, similarly, under expenditure of just over 1 million, and these are the reasons given. Now, this worries me tremendously, this matter. The matter of property rates and services due to municipalities. Yes, it does depend on property valuations and depends on municipalities do the property valuations, but the department is in some instances guilty of impoverizing some of our rural municipalities by not paying rates on time. Not in this term that we are now, but in a previous term, we as a committee, when we visited a rural area in that's managed under the Mtata office, when we arrived there, I think it was Mbashe, local municipality, who thanked us, and we were surprised by that, for the payment that came into their account for rates. And it seemed as if the regional office very quickly paid the rates that was outstanding because the committee was visiting. It might sound hilarious, but it's not. It's just something that should not take place. It's important that the national department responsible for rates pay their rates. I think in the case of councillors in municipalities, you're not allowed to be a councillor unless you pay your rates and unless all your fees are paid with the municipality. You can't be an alderman like that. And I think as an immovable asset management, and what we always use is this gender insensitive term, landlord of the state, which should not be. But the department must lead in all senses, not just in terms of the power it holds via the purse. Real estate information registry, I reflected on that. as the branch that manages the immobile register. The human resources are indicated here, and we would see the number of posts, and you would notice the numbers are there, but you would see that these added to establishment in administration, construction project management is interesting. And it worries me because those are exactly the ones where one would want the post, this column here, we would want this column totally filled with what is on the establishment, not in addition to the establishment, because very often that is for a small period and not necessarily a long period. It could be consulted, it could be consultants that do the work on behalf of people in these branches per week, and they are not necessarily doing their work because they don't have the qualification. We would notice that in certain cases there are overpayments, the leasing contracts, and we'll speak about the leasing just now as an issue that may need investigation. These are the critical posts, critical occupation posts. You would notice that the department highlights architects, town and traffic planners, civil engineering, related professions in the cases number 3, mechanical engineering technicians, and 5, quantity surveyors and related professionals. The problem for me is that I do not see property contract lawyers. I do not see too much on project managers. We have a situation here with the posts and the human resources of PMTE where there's stress on certain BEP type posts, but not on, for instance, I don't know how what is called social facilitators in these projects, how they are professionalized as part of critical occupation. Because where projects very often stall, it's where social facilitation is not successfully done with the project manager and the community does not allow them to come back on. Social facilitation is crucial and it's not indicated. And project managers who very often have 10 and more projects per project manager cannot be brought in and completed on time and within budget. We need to give critical occupation, needs to be looked at critically so that we can include those other positions as well. These are reasons why people vacated posts in the PMTE. Expiry of contract stands at 1,537. Now, expiry of contract must be accompanied with new contracts ready to be filled. In other words, we can't let experienced people leave and there's nobody that's recruited prior to the person leave. So that, and because for me, I have no problem. I just want to make this point. I have no problem with posts for an addition to establishment in a case like, for instance, not here. It's not really here, but let me just refer to it because post additional to establishment is the term I want to use. Post filled additional to establishment. For me, if we use people in a shadowing role to prepare them to fill a position where we know somebody's contract is coming close to expiring, then a person who retires does not leave a vacancy and somebody who comes in who does not have institutional memory. I think strategically this type of thing needs to take place with the leadership, the DG and the senior management, and they need to talk about how they ensure a consistent leadership across the department, specifically around critical posts as well. 26 misconduct cases. One suspended from work without payment. 9 final written warnings, which means they may leave soon. 1 written warning, verbal warning is 1. 2 cases withdrawn, and 12 cases pursued. Not pursued because of retirement, resignation, transfer, or death. Very often those are because of resignations, because they do not want to go to court. And that's very often where members would refer to a record being kept so that those people do not get appointed elsewhere in councils or in other departments. PMT addressed 7 grievances. All 7 were finalized. None is unresolved, in other words. And 3 disputes, 2 were upheld and 1, pardon me, was dismissed. 2 placed on precautionary suspension at a total cost of 2 million. 1 suspension exceeded 30 days at a cost of 2 million. And the exact amounts are there. They're just over the amount. While the other person's precautionary suspension did not exceed 30 days at a total cost of 2,238. The financial performance of the PMT is indicated. We see the expenditure there, and then we see a deficit that we're going to speak about just now. I'm going faster before the chairperson says to me I must move. Sorry. Deficit 1.9 billion, which is a reduction of 965.9 million from what was recorded in restated figures for the 2020-21 financial year. Now that deficit is a huge amount that I say is growing, and the committee needs to keep its eye on that. The AG's opinion on the PMT, the AG gave, the PMT is doing worse than what it did last year, and the issues, there had to be a restatement because the PMTE asset register, in other words, that branch that I refer to, the registry branch, overriding the one that was audited in the prior financial year. So, in other words, there's just not, you see, when you reconstruct a register, it means you're rewriting the register, and the basis of what you're writing it and what information you're using and what reason you do it for is really worrying. And I think members dealt with this in a meeting with a PMTE and stated their disappointment that this is something that, you know, they couldn't substantiate it. There's no supporting audit evidence. AG could not confirm the restatement by alternative means. So therefore, could not determine whether adjustments that were effected corresponding to the opening balance of 129.8 billion. So property, plant and equipment stated at 129.6 billion does not, that amount cannot. Payables from exchange transactions, it didn't follow GRAP. Goods and services did not correctly recognize accrued expenses. And payables from exchange transactions is understated by 245 million, and expenditure was understated. That's the amount there. It's the same amount. I will fix that particular repetition later on and write that sentence properly. Payables from exchange transactions, accrued expenses, and leases. Now, this matter is serious. Payables from exchange transactions around leases, lease accruals, incorrect amounts were recorded. The accrual is overstated by 172.9 million. Recoverable leases was overstated by 104.9 million, and operated lease overstated by 67. It's almost 68 million. Now, This matter, the AG and in a meeting with the committee, the AG referred to the possibility that this needs to be looked at. That evidence may need to be used to put together a document that goes to the presidency so that the presidency condones an investigation, not condones, signs off an investigation, a preliminary investigation, based on the preliminary investigation, for the SIU to investigate the leases further. Some of the issues raised were the PMTE as going concern. We've raised this previously. This overdraft, I said I was going to touch on. I'm not going to dwell on it, but it's something that is not stopping. It just grows. Current liabilities continues to exceed. It grows. March 2021, 4.5. Look at that. So irregular expenditure, 188.8 million, and that's except for what we stated upstairs around leases. Material impairments, losses of 2.8 billion. As a result, lack of recoverability in longstanding receivables. The PMTE is not operating as a trading entity, not because it is not using the value on the asset register to trade. That's not the only reason. It is also not trading. I mean, it's also not operational as it should be and as it should, as it was envisioned, because it is not collecting receivables. It's not collecting debt. Note on the annual financial statement explains receivable from exchange transactions. Section 40 sub 3 sub A of the PFMA says that the entities is required to prepare annual performance report. The performance information in that report, the usefulness and reliability of it was tested, and it has been included in the audit's report, and it's not reliable enough. Compliance with legislation, clearly Section 38 of the PFMA and Treasury Regulation 9.11 is not followed, as well as Treasury Regulation for Effective Internal Controls 8.11. Annual financial statement were not prepared in accordance to Section 40 of the PFMA, revenue management as per Section 38.1 of the PFMA, and consequence management as 38.1H3 and Treasury Regulation 4.11. Internal control deficiencies continue, and I say here that it relates to the defragmented nature that I referred to earlier on, of the PMTE being spread between head office and 11 regional office. And I said it requires further work for 2023 and 2024. In that year, we should probably look at the regional offices more closely. Just as an aside, the deputy minister visited the Upington regional office and had interactions with the Department of Justice around the Upington court, as well as the defense force that's also managed by the department. It would be interesting to hear what her findings were from that meeting. Senior officials entrusted with significant elements of financial statements lack adequate and critical skills, which is why I referred to a focus in the PMTE report on critical occupations as BEP type of occupations, and you leave out financial accounting and financial management skills, then you are in trouble. So that real estate management services unit and the finance unit, the lease management there, the decentralized function there, that is an issue that makes it almost impossible for the DG as accounting officer to properly be accountable for what goes on in the regional offices and to address material misstatements on leases. Majority of allegations around irregular expenditure went to investigation structures. The implementation of recommendations for finalized reports were not always prioritized. So in the DPWI side, it gets well done because it's centrally controlled in the office. But in this case, it cannot easily be done because of that defragmented nature. The Office of the Auditor General also identified material irregularities, am I correct now? Yeah, overpayment on the lease for Department of Agriculture, Rural Development and Land Reform. I will fix that. I think I said in a footnote, yeah, so it is fixed. The lease dates from October 2015, which is why the name stays like that, with a commencement rental of 771,656 per month and an annual escalation of 5.5%. The expiry date on the lease was September 2019, but it continued to make payments based on an old lease contract. This is why I say there should be property specialists that can look at contracts and update them and quickly step in when these types of things happen. This is unnecessary. That overpayment of 1.6 million is unnecessary. Management reported measures to recover the, why must we recover? It shouldn't have to be recovered. An amount of 9.6 million has already been recovered, which is good news from the landlord at year end. Let's hope the rest get recovered. Money gets incurred when you recover, by the way. And that's why I get exasperated on that. The PMT entered into a contract with the service provider on 28 November 2013 to construct a magistrate court at Mamelodi. Contract for a period of 18 months for construction, and the contract value was 94.7 million. The project has been delayed significantly, expenditure paid, completion date extended. Now that means extra money will then be incurred. Daily rate 24, you see, 24,283.26 charged by the contractor based on the approved claims 4, 5, 8, and 9. Delays resulted from civil unrest, riots, strikes, and lockouts. Project manager and the social liaison officer should be able to say long before the time that these things are busy brewing, and they should be able to take stop. That is a contravention of building agreement, principal building agreement, clause 29.1. Contractor is entitled to a revision, but the contract value should not be adjusted if it pertains to delays related to civil unrest, riots, or strike. Requests for extensions with financial impact were the cause of delay related to that matter, and it was approved. The delegation of authority in paragraph 7.5, there was no opportunity to exercise any discretion in reaching the decision, and approval was not in line with the conditions of the contract. PMTE entered into that matter is a construction project management matter. The next one is a lease management matter on behalf of defense. It's a lease with a main lease with effect from 21 April 2016 for 4 years, resulted in overpayments of 14.1 million. And remaining not recovered overpayments amounted to 3.8 million. So the AG also raised compliance with legislation. Numerous allegations around supply chain management, fraud and financial misconduct has been given over to the SIU, and they were in progress at the time the AG reported. We go to the entities, and here we will run very quickly, Chair. We're not going to say much about the IDT except that the IDT's long-term sustainability, these are the threats to the IDT, the corporate formal identity. We may need a report in the new financial year, in this current financial year, on from GTAC on the corporate, the new formal identity, and the entity should regularly report to us on how they address the going concern status, so that it does not keep drawing money from the department for survival. It should grow the business, and members were vocal on this matter, that some of the contracts around repair, operate, and transfer be given to this entity rather than to others like the DBSA. And members, I think the chair also referred to the matter of how PBSA, I think, is managing the Telkom Towers project, and therefore it might be better to give it to another entity like the IDP. The IDP's board is in a good state, energetic, innovative, and forward-thinking business people that is addressing delivery capacity, looking at enabling technology, looking at the design and structure and processes of its business, and addressing the organizational culture. The quality of personnel they need to address and ensure, because they ensure that they get people and retain new people and retain those that are good, because they have lost a lot of people. The financial statement of the entity is stated here. The target was 2.6 billion, a total 2.2 billion. Management fees billed at 122 million against the operating expenditure of 205 million. This means that the IDT was 60% self-funding. We want that percentage to creep up substantially in the next few years, so that this operating cost deficit that was funded by government, my apologies, I'll just fix that quickly, transferred from Program 4 comes to an end, and the entity can be a fully functional Schedule 2 entity as per the PFMA. Cash and cash equivalent as indicated, trade and other receivables as indicated, and then we look at the age of the receivables reported to us as indicated there. The 90 days and 60 to 90 days should come down, and the 30 to 60 days should go up. In fact, we would prefer it to be higher. Yeah, all of those should come this way, so that the entity is able to say that it can collect what is due to it. My apologies, Chair and members. I just need to do that. Chair, I'm not going to again say much more about that. Those are things that we spoke about, and this is what I refer to around corporate governance for the entity. Board is functional. This entity did not have a functional board for a while. Board is functional. The leadership and oversight of the board by the 8 members, minister appointed a full 12-member board. And this board held 8 meetings and a strategic planning workshop 2021-2, planning ahead for the financial year we are in. And the Audit and Risk Committee is functional. I looked at some of their work, and you can see the energy and the readiness to deal with issues by the IDT. Agrima SA, there were a few issues that Agrima SA had with the event that members recall that you went to that I could not make, and I was quite angry about it, where eco-labeling, ASA eco-labeling projects were announced. That event was good, and we shouldn't speak about the event necessarily, but the sad part is that this green building rating tool, this eco-labeling project tool, was not completed within the financial year that we are under, that's under review. And I think the AG was quite harsh with the ASA on that. I'm not saying the AG shouldn't be harsh, but I think they've been done in a bit, because the implementation is clear and the costing, I didn't see a problem with the costing of that. Then for me as important is revenue from services. This is an example to the PMT. Revenue from services increased from 1.2 to 3.5. Now, that's good. It shows improvement in how project is executed, but also shows that the entity gathers what is due to it. It collects its debt. Recoveries from bad debt also shows signs of recovery. There's no need for a condonement and from 2015-16. No, it's current. It's dealt with. and that even because of the rise of the recent rises in increase interest rates, we're able to get a return on investment because the money in the bank is more. Grants received increased as indicated, and some of that has to do with the solidarity fund for the COVID-19 period. The entity complains that budget limitations affected the completion of that eco-labeling and access to accredited laboratory for the testing of prototype products and systems. But this is also a lagging effect of the lockdowns, where other clients, not clients, but other entities such as the CSIR, where they get labs, as well as other private institutions where they get lab and product systems. Facilities from for the testing of those was not available. The projects that lagged as the green building rating tool, and as I say, the ASA, AgriMySA eco-labeling tool, and the relocation to the office that they bought, I think in Centurion, I'm not certain. So it led to a surplus, and the AG didn't like the fact, I mean, not didn't like, but the AG referred to the fact that that surplus that they now have to ask Treasury to roll over of 10.6 million is a problem for the AEG. It increased its strategic efforts to get that certified non-standardized construction-related products and systems. This matter, by the way, I want to stress that the committee should actually commend itself and congratulate itself. Before this committee continued stressing that AgriMySA must become more visible in terms of its non-standardized, innovative, green products, building products and systems. Before that, the AgriMySA did not have that on their horizons. They did not, in fact, they slightly opposed it. Wanting to operate just in their labs and testing and certifying. But since then, ASA has strengthened these efforts to get these systems into the professional build environment and construction section. And it's doing it through partnership with what they call specifiers of non-standardized construction-related products and systems. Please allow me to do that, otherwise it stays there. And these specifiers are Human Settlements Department nationally, Water and Sanitation, Transport, Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs, and their implementing agencies. But I think also some of the state-owned entities like ESCOM and SANRAL. Chair and members, the fact that these partnerships are being gone into and pursued is due to the pressure you put on for these products to become part of. And I mean, the second and third bullet is important. Not only does national departments now get spoken to and presented to some of these projects that are certified and pass the tests, but also this is strong. The second bullet is very strong, where the ASA participates in bid specification committees of these departments and state-owned enterprises. For what reason? To promote the introduction and fit-for-purpose use of non-standardized construction-related products and systems. I must delete this one again. So the third one is then the progressive one, where we want these things to be on the market. And ASA announced to us here that they are conducting market analysis. They said it in the past, but for me it's very important that we not only see it here, but see it in relation to your oversight work. That has an effect. Because we make these recommendations, we don't always think there's action coming from them. Here's proof that your oversight work does have an effect. Members, we lost a stalwart of this entity, Mr. Joe Adiambo. We still miss him. At every event with the ASA, you miss this man. And him and his family, we hope they We sympathized with them, but we hope they find peace in knowing that he did so much for this sector. But since his death, the entity had to appoint a new CEO. I think they did now. The executive committee also had a bit of instability due to that, as well as the executive manager. And the executive manager corporate services that was temporarily appointed. These also operations were further affected by the high staff turnover during 21-22. Stability is now being achieved with the appointment of well-qualified and experienced staff. We met some of them, and the high staff turnover and disruptions point to the need for organizational review to put in place a second layer of leaders. In other words, when this happens, when we lose people of repute and high standing, that there's a second layer that can step in, that understands the sector and is respected and known by ourselves and others in the sector and other departments with whom you have relationship, work relationships, so that the entity stays agile and responsive to change. And the organizational objectives do not at all find instability. And the organization can continue to deliver. So these five bullets is what the minister and government says all entities should deliver on, and the executive and the board states that they are committed to that. Very energetic board led by Professor, I'm not going to get to his name. Somebody shout it out, please. What's the prof's name? I can't remember his name now. But
Mahachi.
Mahachi, thank you. Thank you, ASA fan. ASA fan Hicklin. And yeah, the very energetic board, very well-qualified board that really does a good job. So I'm going to just under this one refer to delays, how the mandate, the revised mandate of the department itself has delayed the public buildings, green building certification framework and rating. So we must remember that we work as a unified unit. And when one unit does not perform optimally, then the other one cannot deliver. And in this case, because the department's mandate is still not properly revised and stated in the Public Works Act, I want to add, the public buildings, green building certification framework and rating tool could not be completed. Monitoring compliance with prescript of supply chain management and ensure that all invoices are approved and paid within 30 days. Total expenditure 45,519 and 24 was paid outside of the 30 days, and that's a small amount, but we can see here the standard that people in this entity, that the management and leadership of this entity put on supply chain management. Not even that amount it wants to be outside. We can see that in the case of, I think, the IDT and the PMTE, it's quite high, and they even have up to 90. There's an amount of irregular expenditure of 274,242 that needs to be given attention so that doesn't grow. This table links performance with budget allocation, and it shows that the entity recognizes the need to fill vacancies to ensure that it has the required skill and qualified experts to do and complete and timeously, successfully complete projects. Cannot make plans and state performance objectives without such personnel and required equipment and laboratory space to do assessments, to test prototypes and issue reliable certification for non-standardized building material and systems. And especially if they're going to start going into the market, as well as be there on bid specification committees for other departments and other entities, it must ensure that it has all the space and the staff necessary to do so. That's the revenue collected. this entity sits with a reasonable surplus, as we said, 7.2 million annual government grant of 33.1 from Program 4. The human resources, as indicated in this table, from senior management to the unskilled, where the unskilled is actually zero. They move from semi-skilled up, and their professional qualified people, you can see, is very high. It's a research-heavy entity. The next one, Construction Industry Development Board, is one of my favorites, personal favorites. Sorry, Chair, that I have to state that outrightly here, but if Honorable Hicklin can have a favorite, we can also have so. So the CIDB as a construction, I'm from a family that comes from the construction industry, carpentry specifically, and I'm horrible with work. But Chair, this register of contractors forms the backbone on which we can, if we strategically get the CIDB also popularized across the country. It should have offices in the most rural so that we can develop contractors very rapidly from grade 1 to at least grade 4. Young women from rural areas. If that can happen and we can have that entrepreneurial spirit, then this register of contractors, and I'll refer to what is required to do that later on as we proceed here. The ROC provides a record of contractors per grade. You can't tender unless you're on this register. Tender for government jobs if you're not on the register. And this issue of infrastructure as the core aspect to create economic development in the country is therefore very much, the ROC is very much the backbone of that effort. So if you look at the applications process here, then it tells a story. I'm not going to analyze it now because the time is just not there. But just about this, this is what I meant about the ROC and rural areas and infrastructure. That if you look at the registration reported, if you look at the incoming grade ones, development must happen so that that grade one contracting, the entry percentage should not be too high. It must be a manageable one, and there must be a pipeline for contractors right through. So the ROC on its own is nothing. But this thing of what is the assessment criteria to progress from 1 to 2 up to 9, that's important. It must develop those criteria. It must publicize it. And it must do so with the contractors and with their participation. Because for a number of years, the criteria is far too heavily weighted in terms of what amount can you manage and the quality of work alone. There are very important other criteria close to the RPL, the Recognition of Prior Learning type of criteria, but that needs to be done in such a way that you do not dilute quality. But if you say people must manage a certain amount per grade to move up, then you as a CIDB should assist and show that you have a program in place to assist these people. And this is where the opinion of the Auditor General with this entity comes in. And I'll get to the build program later on. But first, we want to deal with the construction industry regulation that the CIDB Act allows the CIDB to implement. And that is the investigation, the resolution, and the processing of conduct breaches. Also the entry into registry, the ROC, as well as the ROP, the registry of projects. You would find that there are, in some instances, and we'll get to that, collusion and corruption when it comes to that because of the importance. So there has been such such instances, cases of fraudulent tax clearance, falsified track records, misrepresentation of financial statements. Because of it being a criteria, it becomes something that then gets misrepresented and falsified just to be on the ROC, and then non-compliance with the ROC in some cases. The registry of projects is important because you can then, the two together assist with that development, but also assists us to keep a track of contractors. 2014 CID regulations is important. And this is the aspect. This aspect is crucial. That the ROP, every project of a single contract construction works, the value of that project exceeding 200,000, up to projects more than 10 million, there's an amount that goes towards development. Now, what has happened is that the CIDB has records of the amount, but the CID, but the Auditor General interpreted that as not sufficiently recorded, the amount sufficiently recorded, and therefore it caused a problem. I'm going further ahead, but just to say that this matter then, this is the tool, this CID regulation that allows money to go in for development is important. The CIDB also improved itself with the CIDB iTender software, where it is able to process it better, and contractors can then insert the information for the ROP faster. Compliance monitoring that takes place. And here the AG in the annual report showed non-compliance, very unfortunate, of Eskom, Transnet, PRASA, SANRAL, Cape Town City Metropolitan Municipality, Department of Transport and Public Works, KZN, Rand Water, etc. I'm not going to Joburg Municipality. So that non-compliance in some instances, and this should be addressed, and the rate of compliance here as in quarter four, the budgeted amount is indicated. Yes. So the top 20 spent is what I just went through. That assists us to see the rate at which they comply. So I wasn't scolding, I'm sorry. But all of them are indicated, but those percentages that are low needs to creep up, and it should not be allowed. CIDB needs to keep their eye on that particular aspect. Now, awareness that much is still needed to be done to strengthen this aspect is there. The establishment of this regulatory compliance unit and the appointment of a compliance manager is commendable. So that in the future years, that will be better. And so we as a committee, I suggest, say something about that. We may even want a recommendation on it. So this is the issue around the build program. Standard, the build program is actually gazetted in Gazette number 43495 as the standard for developing skills through infrastructure contracts. And so what happens is grade 7 to 9 contractors allocates 0.2% of the project amount to a maximum of 2 million to the fund to ensure that that can be used for contractor development. Now, CIDB built 43.4 million, built up revenue to that tune, of which 12.3 million was collected, which translates to 28%. Now, it's a new thing, but the collection rate is therefore net, you know, it's not up to par for this financial year. But this created a misunderstanding with the Office of the Auditor General. In a further section, it is dealt with in more detail. That's when we talk about it. Just to refer to this matter, the CIDB is doing very well with their doctoral workshops and their publications. They do quarterly publications on the construction industry. That's on their website. Members should grab hold of that. It's really educational for ourselves who work in the sector. But I want to refer to this later on when I get to the sister entity, the CBE. So this doctoral workshop is something that was hosted across 5 African countries, but a lot of the work that they do is with a center of excellence at the Department of Construction Management and Quantity Surveying at University of Johannesburg. The center produced 5 honors, 2 masters, and 2 PhD candidates, and both the PhDs are South African women who've been retained as lecturers and who are postdoctoral fellows that are continuing with research and really enhancing their academic careers. Now, those 2 study reports referred to there were later published as books, which is important, documenting construction-related 4th Industrial Revolution research in the country, and the other one examined the causes and effects on stakeholders of construction tender cancellation. That construction tender cancellation is a costly practice. We referred to it earlier on as an example earlier on, where if you say no, it must be, you know, the date is extended and the budget gets added to, it disrupts service delivery and fuels industry corruption. So that's the second study, and it's also a book, and we should try and find it so that we can all read it. The faculty, the CIDB further has a new relationship with the Faculty of Built Environment at Walter Sisulu University. I suspect that we should have a look at that. They support lecturers to undertake research and obtain higher degrees of master's and doctoral levels, and 10 journal articles that were published in subject ranging from construction, digitalization and skills for 21st century employment, to construction sector health and safety practices. So just one matter, the judgment in the case Minister of Finance versus AFRI Business, in that judgment, the court set aside the triple PFA. This negatively impacted on the performance target that the CIDB set itself to whittle down the 70% respectively. First category to 45% average, and the other one to 33%. That first category I'm talking about is black-owned contractors, and the second one, 33% grade 79. They wanted that to be done, and the triple PFMA not now being applicable anymore, of course, hampers that. CIDB lists municipalities as clients that struggle to move the municipal budget spend from 84 to 69. Entity has little control over this, but I find it always very strange that entities or departments want to have a performance target that they don't have control over. That just doesn't sound like it should be the case, because you just incorrectly assess yourself and say that you're a failure in a certain aspect while you're not supposed to be. That's the issue with the EPWP as well. And that has been addressed in that case. But I think the CIDB should, in this case, also take note of that. This paragraph is an important one about public sector compliance with the CIDB Act, and specifically CID 18, I think, regulations. No, CIDB 2014 regulations. Need to be improved. So performance targets to improve the rate at which the public sector institutions at national, provincial, and local government register projects on the ROP is increased. That's what I referred to on that table earlier on. This is a weakness that's due to a lack of enforcement that's implemented on government institution. This is also part of what I think we should just see whether it can be part of the Amendment Act of the CIDB. There's often lack of appetite to institute criminal action against government departments, very often due to political interference or political power being feared. And we should not. We should stick to the law and the constitution and what needs to be done to get things done. The entity further reported ineffectiveness of its strategy to improve private sector compliance to the regulations. It's working on strategies to improve that, to improve registration rate and compliance with the register of projects, and implement punitive measures against defaulters, to generate reports for the ministers, DGs, and for all the committees of parliament, including this one, and identified a need to have a better relationship with the AG, because if they did have one, they would not have had that negative test. Incidences in Gauteng, Free State, and KZN offices, disciplinary action against officials for one in Gauteng provincial office and two incidences in Free State, all were found guilty and dismissed. Assets were damaged and stolen in the KZN office during the July 2021 riots, and they were valued at 901,000. Claim was lodged and it was received in this reported financial year. AG's report, this is the matter. Qualified opinion on aspects of the report. AG is interpreting evidence that the CIDB did not bill and collect all the revenue due to the entity in accordance with what the PFMA say should be generally recognized accounting practice. This was under the category revenue from non-exchange transactions, and it's that revenue that's generated through the billed, from the billed fees. The AG identified this as a construction contract that qualify for best practices project assessment scheme, but for which a billed fee was not billed and recorded. I think that when the AG expressed this qualified opinion, if the CIDB gave the proper explanation, then the opinion might not have been as strong as it was, but that is how it is. The AG is, however, correct that it has added to the surplus that is now supposed to be requested to Treasury to be rolled over. So due to the inability to collect bulk fees in time before the end of the financial year, the AG had to state that the CIDB did not take effective steps. And that is the basis of the opinion. AG further reminded the portfolio committee that the SIU was investigating allegations on the registration of contractors at the CIDB. And you see, we can see that the Gauteng office, the Free State office incidences has been reported, and action has been taken. But for others, the SIU is investigating allegations so that a proclamation can be made. I almost referred to a presidential proclamation as a condonement earlier on. My apologies for that. The investigation covers alleged actions between 1 January 2006 and 15 April 2016. At the date of this report, the SIU was investigating it still, and there were no results received of finalized investigation. The portfolio committee may need a progress report. And again, I just want to ensure that we possibly do a recommendation on that. The financial performance is recorded in that table. We go to the Council for the Built Environment Chair. I'm busy with the last one. In the case of the CBE, it received an unqualified audit report. The board is fully functional. In the annual report, in the annual financial statement of this entity, it provided the reasons for under and over collection of revenue. Transfer 53,528 was received as a grant. Levies received from the Engineering Council. They collected less here due to reduced membership. This matter needs to be looked at, and reasons for this need to be given. We asked questions. I cannot recall us receiving a satisfying reply. That's why that sentence is there. If it's not the case, then members can correct me and we can fix this particular thing. But I cannot recall a satisfying answer being given. Other operating income proceeds for insurance from insurance claims for assets that were replaced, and accrued income for a claim finalized after year end from the employment benefits service provider. Then these are the expenditure shown per program in the CBE report, as in the annual financial statement, and the surpluses under administration is as indicated. The CBE speaks of no suitable provider being having been identified to undertake the project, and that amount there was unspent. Settlement for the severance of the former CEO was budgeted for, but was not finalized by the end of the financial year. We need to keep an eye on that. And prior year committed funds utilized for revenue enhancement strategy, organizational redesign, computer expenses. These are the normal licenses that should be done, and the integrated electronic built environment system resulted in actual expenditure exceeding budget expenditure. Now, this type of difference is then offset against the underspending. But now, this is a planning issue. You should know that you're going to renew your licenses. And I have a bit of a question mark there where more information should come on that matter. It's not as straightforward as that. It's part of an easy explanation for something I think that's got to do with planning that's not done properly. Shortfall in transformation has been, this reason was given, exceeded but not exceeded what was budgeted for. Skills and capacity development, surplus there. Accreditation visits not scheduled due to the third wave of COVID-19 pandemic, but that third wave was not, I can't recall the third wave being that having that negative an effect. I need to be corrected on that, but that's my view. And that then resulted in savings on travel. Now, when I say CCADB here, I find that the CBE claimed that it procured the knowledge hub, procurement for the knowledge hub was finalized towards the end of the year as a positive outcome. My problem is that when you look properly at the information under human resources, then you'll notice that the senior manager for research and researchers for the knowledge management hub requires staff. It means that the knowledge hub exists and was procurement took place for it, but it is not functional. And I think the CBE needs to step up on research and advisory tremendously, because the CBE needs to penetrate the private sector, including doing research into alternate voluntary councils that lots of the professional, especially in engineering, architecture, people voluntarily register with others, and research is required into what is going in those others and what type of fees are being collected. This is something that's required also that feeds into program four of the main department, the main vote DPWI program four, so that when CBE's Act is amended, such information from that knowledge hub can feature in the new CBE Act, Amendment Act. Expenditure on training per program is shown. I had a look at it and I have my issues with it. 0.55% expenditure percent of personnel cost. With all organizations, I would have an issue with this because I think more must be spent, but I also think that much better recording must be made and much better reporting is needed on expenditure on training program. Much were not done because expenditure on staff and vacancies very often relate to one another. If you do not train me, I may leave. If I train myself, and qualify myself better for the industry I leave, and you lose a skilled and experienced person with institutional knowledge. Now that is the unfortunate thing, but it's something that needs the board and management of CPD needs to give more attention to. No progress, I think, on filling these positions during the current financial year. They say it's because the revised organizational structure is not complete. Not a good reason, not enough information given. These are the two positions that I highlighted. And then, of course, this is very important, strategic planning, monitoring, evaluation. Clear, position is not there and it shows. If that position was filled, maybe the organizational development would have been done with much more vigor and energy. There is a bit of tiredness in the CBE. There is a bit of what I call lethargy to actually think a bit further and be innovative. The stress on transformation should not be taken off. However, the CBE needs to look at quality and needs to look ahead at how, at the particular role it needs to play to penetrate the private industry, especially with that knowledge hub. There's some analysis that I included on vacancies and the relation with training. Chair, we are completed, the CBE succeeded to complete more than 50% of the performance targets in its annual performance plan. Would be good if it raises that in the current financial year. Not the one under review, the one we are in. And it received a clean audit. Board is functional, as I said. Internal audit functions are functioning well. In-year and quarterly report took place as per the PFMA 2 and via the DPWIs in IGI branch. We appreciate the Minister and the Deputy Minister and their participation and deliberation with the committee. Senior management of the department, the Auditor General, and the board leadership of all and administrative teams and leadership of all the entities for their collective commitment and willingness to deliberate with this committee so that we can strengthen ourselves to improve the lives of our people and services to the people. Chair, the recommendations are here, but I am going to stop so that members can take charge of the report. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Shu'aib, for such a detailed explanation on the report. I think it has assisted in some of us understanding better what is contained there. As much as we have read it, but the explanation that you have given now, I think it goes a long way in explaining some of the things that were in the grey area. I will now invite honourable members to raise their comments or questions on the report. Honourable Hicklin, followed by Honourable Graham Mare, those honourable members, their hands are up. Honourable Hicklin, followed by Honourable Graham Mare.
Thank you so much, Chair. Chair, if you'll excuse me, I won't put my camera on. I've had a bereavement in my family and I am not looking at my desk, if you will excuse me for that. The most important point I would like to make is just to really appreciate the incredible work that our amazing support team have done, primarily in the form of Shu'aib and Inez and Nola, in all the incredible work that they have done in getting this really phenomenally comprehensive report to us, and in such a short period of time, considering that we only finished our deliberations on Thursday of last week. I'm not going to make very many points. I would like to just highlight that in all the reports that served before us last week, the most important thing that kept coming up for me was a thing that said filling of vacancies, filling of vacant posts in every single solitary entity that we dealt with. We had issues, and it came up time and time again. And we have spoken about this so many times, where we cannot accomplish critical things within each department because there seems to be either an inability of the entities to fill critical posts, thereby disenfranchising the entities from accomplishing their stated goals, missions, and visions, because critical skilled posts are not filled. And the AG's report picks up on this all the time. There seems to be a leadership vacuum, and that leadership vacuum translates into an absenteeism, which makes it very, very difficult. And so therefore, one of the recommendations that I would like to look at is that this critical need to fill skilled vacancies gets highlighted across the board in order for the DPWI to fulfill its mandate of clearly being able to carry out its mandate as a department. On page 6, again, we allude to the fact that there is no Public Works Act, and that makes this department's job so much more difficult. On page 8, we speak about ESA, and we have spoken about ESA, this Infrastructure South Africa, which resides within the office of the president. I used the Afrikaans word for candy floss, which is spoorkasem, because spoorkasem, candy floss, is something that you know exists, but it is an intangible. It's something that you can see like a ghost almost. And I know that ISA is coming to do a presentation to us, but ISA, in terms of the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure, is like spoorkasem. It's like something that we know exists but isn't there. And yet its budget is enormous. It is the infrastructure component for infrastructure development in South Africa, and as a department which has as its major component infrastructure as an economic driver, we have to have some form of oversight mechanism and some kind of handle on what ESA is and what ESA does, and yet we have no handle on it. We have no access to anything that is ESA. And these are just I have just made a list of the issues that for me are really, really, really problematic. Shuaib, I don't know if what I'm saying is giving you any food for thought or enabling you to make any notes or to write anything. But this is what I read and made notes of when I was going through the document and while you were going through your presentation. I totally agree with you when you said that instead of vilifying the construction mafia, somewhere along the line, we need to find some kind of mechanism whereby we are in a position to, I hate the thought of incorporating them into a discussion, but maybe that is the only way in which we are going to be able to engage with them meaningfully so that they can contribute meaningfully as opposed to being more destructive than they actually are at the moment. Because right now, the delays to the construction industry, because of the destruction that they wreck on every single, whether it's private or state-owned construction project, is really, really, really difficult. And it's making the lives of everybody involved in the construction industry so incredibly difficult all the time. I'm just looking at my other, going on to the prestige portfolio. I agree with you 100%. The Parliamentary Villages Board and the, again, maybe a bad choice of word, but the putting them under the thumb and forcing them actually to do their job, coercing may be a better word, for them to do their job. They are mandated to actually running the portfolio, the parliamentary villages appropriately, has to become monitored because A, they are not, there is no proper oversight on the parliamentary villages. And we do not get, the fact that they have not handed in management annual reports cannot be allowed to continue because we can't hold the prestige portfolio to account if the Parliamentary Villages Board is not doing its job. And we have to ensure that the Parliamentary Villages Board is being held to account. Otherwise, as the department's oversight body, this portfolio committee is not doing what it's mandated to do. Again, it goes back to a vacancy rate within the department and within what we have to have oversight over. I'm now just going to go, I'm going to go to the immovable asset register and concur again with you that unless we look at the REIS, REMS and the CPM, unless we are in a position to get that immovable asset register complete, and unless we can ensure that it is a working immovable asset register, we are not going to be able to ensure that this entity works comprehensively to achieve what it is supposed to achieve. By moving away from Archibus and Sage, and now looking at the implementation of a new software package, we can only be doing immeasurable harm to what is an already fragmented department, and we cannot, the PMTE cannot become a property management trading entity if we're constantly changing software packages and disenfranchising regional offices by further distancing their ability to communicate with a national entity, a national office, if we continue to change the software system and making the decentralized offices ability to communicate with a national office even more difficult. So I agree with you 100%. We have to also have property contract lawyers, property management specialists being brought in to manage the biggest property entity in the country. So I am just reinforcing a lot of what you are saying. We can no longer entertain the expiry of contracts because these things don't happen overnight. You have a sufficient lead time to know that a contract of an employee or a contractor is going to happen, and therefore put in stopgaps to make sure that they don't expire. We have to have preemptive and preventative measures in place. And this leads back to having your eye on the ball and not taking your eye off the ball. And that can only happen if you have skilled people in positions of employment who know how to plan and have preemptive planning going on so that this kind of thing doesn't happen. We have spoken often in this department that the PMTE seems to have an aversion to collecting on its debt. I don't understand how an entity that is supposed to be generating money has an aversion to generating money, which is what the PMTE seems to have. And it really is it's a major problem, and that manifests in the overpayment of leases that should never, ever, ever happen. So I'm reiterating a lot of what you're saying. Going on to the entities themselves, I'm only going to concentrate on the CBE, and I'm going to say to you, we have to have a very close eye on the CBE. The CBE is an umbrella body that should not be operational. It is far too involved in the operational day-to-day work of what is going on. It is an umbrella body over six councils. Someone like the chairperson and the deputy chairperson should never in a million years be in a position where they attend 111 meetings. The previous chairperson, I think, attended 38 meetings over a year. They are paid an honorarium for every meeting they attend. It is physically impossible for them as oversight people to be so operationally involved that they can attend 111 meetings. In the previous year, in the previous 2020 to 2021, Dr. Dlamini attended 96 meetings, earning himself a cool 563,000 rand. Ms. Mahodi attended 78 meetings, earning herself 324,000 rand. This year, in this financial annual report, they each attended 111 meetings. The average councillor only attends 17 meetings. Keith Jacobs in the last year attended 41 meetings. Something very, very, very wrong is happening that they are able to attend 111 meetings. And it is our job. It's not a vindictive witch hunt. It is our job to find out why they are so operationally invested in attending so many meetings. There is something fundamentally going on in the CBE that is wrong. We have to look at it they are not doing that which they are meant to do. The functions of their knowledge hub is underspent by so much money. They are not doing what they are supposed to be doing. They are too involved in operational work. They underspend where they are supposed to be working and overspend where they are not supposed to be involved. It's a critical, critical function that they are doing what they are not supposed to be doing. Their research and advisory work is sadly lacking. They only produced 4 research papers in the entire year. They underspent dramatically. They only spent 0.9% of their budget. They underspent by 127 million rand. That should be their function. That is where they need to concentrate their efforts. And that is the area that they are doing nothing about it. They do little support where they need to support and do much investigation where they should be keeping their nose clean. It's a major worry for us. And if we are going to concentrate on anything within the CBE, that is the area for me that we need to concentrate on. I will leave it there. Thank you so much, Chair. But again, thank you so much to Shu'aib, Inez and Nola for being beyond amazing as our team. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Hickling, Honorable Graham Murray, followed by Honorable Trink, followed by Honorable Van Kavik in that other place.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'd like to reiterate what Honourable Hicklin said, and a huge thank you to Shu'aib and Inez and Nola for an outstanding job on the report. I just want to look at some of the recommendations. One of them was obviously the report on the parliamentary villages on their transport. So I think I see that's now been included. The other one is facilities management contracts. There's a big problem with that in particularly with respect to relationships with arts and culture and the Department of Justice. There was a massive difference between what was expended. It was about 235 million rand was spent on cleaning and various other facilities management activities, and they only recouped about 11 million. So we need to find out. I know that they're doing this whole total facilities management strategy that's coming into place. We need to have regular feedback on the implementation of that, and whether or not it's bearing fruit, and also whether or not it's addressing particularly the 2 departments that were highlighted. The other recommendation, I think we look at in terms of the construction management, the construction project management area. One of the big issues is consultants. We need to have a report on whether or not we are deriving value from money from consultants and project managers. Because where we have got projects that are majorly over time, majorly over budget, and we've still got consultants and project managers that we are paying, there's something very, very wrong with that system. So I think at some point we need to get a report from the department on whether or not there is value for money in appointing consultants and project managers. And I think we need to bring in social facilitation there. I know Shu'aib raised that. Social facilitation is one of the mechanisms that can be used to counter the effect of the construction mafia. But I know that particularly in our municipality, there were 2 schools that are 6 times over time, millions of rands over budget. And one of the biggest problems was that the social facilitation consultants that were being used, hadn't been paid by the Department of Education or by the Department of Public Works, and as such had refused to do any further work. So that is so we've had people rioting, we've had people blocking things, we've had people demanding stuff because there's no proper engagement with the community. And CLOs are not being, they're not sufficient to carry on that responsibility. So I do think we need to look at whether or not social facilitators are being properly utilized in that department, consultants and project managers. And I think it's something that needs to be addressed. Looking at the construction mafia, the 30% that's being allocated to SMMEs is not actually legislated anywhere. From my understanding, this emanated from a SONA speech that Zuma, the former president Zuma did. And he was the one who then said, we need to be allocating 30% to SMMEs. From my understanding, it's never been developed into a policy. It's just been taken forward as a result of that speech. And I could be wrong, but I read something about that recently. And I think because if that is the case, and there is no proper 30% policy in place, that is allowing there to be this issue. Because what is happening in real terms, and I've raised this with the CIDB, is that when a company gets a big construction job and 30% is allocated to the SMMEs, how is it allocated? Is it a labor only? Are we trying to upskill and uplift? So we want them to actually run it as their proper subcontractors. How is that the 30% increase, or is it just 30% of the actual work done? I don't believe there's sufficient clarity around the 30%, and that's creating a lacuna that's allowing this construction mafia to thrive. So I think at some point, either in the CIDB Act when it's amended, or as part of a policy direction, something has to be done around this 30% where it is actually formalized and that there are proper guidelines that are in place so that this can be properly dealt with and addressed so that we can discuss the lacuna that is in place. And then I know Honorable Hetland did raise it, Public Works Bill. We haven't put that in as one of the recommendations, and I agree that we need to keep the pressure on. We were promised that this Public Works Bill would happen during this period. And we've got less than 18 months left of our period. And we have a problem because that bill has not yet been drafted or gazetted or whatever. We haven't seen it. So I think those are my major issues. Obviously, IDT remains an issue. Oh, the immovable asset register, I agree with Honorable Hicklin, but what needs to be done now is that we need to have regular updates on the progress on that, what software they're now using, because we've had different statements around the software that'll be used, how it's being, the progress in terms of getting the information together. And we also need ongoing feedback around the ROT program and the way that the department is addressing unused, underutilized, and poor buildings. So I think those would be my inputs. Thank you again very much for all the hard work.
Thank you, Honorable Graham Murray. Honorable Tree.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, just a few comments also from myself. Firstly, I think thanks to the Secretariat for an excellent report. In one of my previous committees, there was some talk about the, just in terms of accountability, those whom the committee needs to hold accountable. There's essentially our three levels of accountability, which involves the portfolio committee, the involvement of the Auditor General, involvement of the Parliament and so on itself. But I think that clarity is going to be needed, because it is my view that we as a committee don't just have the mandate to hold the minister to account or the executive to account, but it goes further than the minister who represents the executive in our case, but also to the heads of entities, that we also needs to hold account and will report to this committee. So I think it's important that we get clarity in terms of the aspect of holding who to account and the depth that that can go to, so we are not seem to be contradicting each other. My second point is, Shoaib, in the presentation, you make mention of old irregular expenditure that kind of gets carried through, waiting to be condoned. But I don't know whether in the report you actually included you gave the total in terms of what the old irregular expenditure was and the new irregular expenditure and how that is compounded. So if you could possibly just give an indication of what that is. I think clearly there's also concern with regards to the overstatement on leases raised by the Auditor General, particularly with regards to PMTE. And I think the points that I made about accountability, clearly I think PMTE needs to be held. And there's a number of concerns that have been raised also by the Auditor General. And in terms of that accountability, perhaps we need to be looking also at quarterly reports from some of our different entities, so that where the Auditor General has actually raised and there are certain red flags, as the portfolio committee in those quarterly reports, we can hold the entities to account. Chair, then on the issue of the construction mafia, I understand that there are legitimate calls for inclusion by communities into the inclusion into the construction industry. But I do also think that we need to call it what it is, and that the construction mafia actually exists. It is my belief that it doesn't only exist within the construction industry, but also within the import-export industry, within our trades, within our ports as well. I chatted recently to a businessman who deals extensively with imports and exports, and there are real concerns that these mafias are looking at actually a takeover within the different sectors. And I think we need to call it what it is. There is a construction mafia, and I think Shoaib says he doesn't like the term, but that's exactly what is actually happening. Let me give an example of a young man that I've been working closely with over many years. His name is Nkanyiso. He's an engineer, and he had it in his heart to bring Wi-Fi fiber network to impoverished areas where your mainstream big companies, your MTNs and so on, don't necessarily want to invest in. And so he decided that he would seek funding, take the risk of bringing Wi-Fi into the impoverished communities in South Africa. And in one of the communities, you had this construction mafia that came in and stopped his business because they wanted a share. They thought that he was actually, this was a tender that he got from government, and they were demanding the 30%. And so it exists. There are other examples, of colleagues of mine who also friends of mine who work in the construction industry, and there's clear collusion that also takes place. Some don't want anything to do with government just because of the level of corruption, and they want to keep their hands clean. So I think that we mustn't sugarcoat it. It exists, and we need to be able to, and I want to agree with the Honorable Graham Murray. I think that there needs to be clear protocols and policies put in place around how we actually deal with those in particular who have legitimate grounds for inclusion. But those who do not have legitimate grounds and just demand 30% without wanting to do any work, that is completely unacceptable. And then my final comment, Chair, is just with regards to the asset register, the immovable asset register. I think Shoaib also raised this and other colleagues have raised it. I think that our committee must demand accountability. not only accountability, but I think also a roadmap, call it what you may, with particular timeframes for the conclusion of the finalizing of an asset register. It you know, it boggles the mind that you know, we have one of the largest property portfolios, but we are not able to button down something as simple as having an immovable asset register in place. So I do think that as a committee, we now need to give guidance and set the parameters in place to ensure that this is not something that gets raised year after year. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Tring. Honourable Van Stalwijk.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Good morning, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members. And I want to join the Honourable Members who appreciate the report that has been presented to us by Mr. Content Advisor. Chairperson, it's a huge task that they've performed in this NOLA. We really appreciate what you are doing, and it really assists us in performing our duties. Chairperson, I'm not going to zoom into the issues that has been raised by the previous members, although I'm agreeing with many of the inputs that has been made. To me, Chairperson, I want to emphasize the issue of legislation that's not being taken seriously, there's no movement on, that is not in existence to cover this whole sector, the public works as well as its entities. So we need to see some movement in that area, including the Public Works Act, CIDB amendment, CBE, etc. So we need to have a recommendation in that regard. Then, Chairperson, in terms of DPWI, the unqualified audit for 7 years, but with the emphasis of matters and additional matters as far back as 2015-16. It's a point of concern, and we need to have a recommendation in that regard, that it's really that matters needs to be addressed. It needs to be dealt with. It can't go on and they are dragging. I'm sure, Chairperson, looking at the state of affairs or how things are evolving, many of people who should have been charged already left the department by now, because there's no a seriousness in addressing that. A Chairperson, on with regards to CVE, the reduction of membership of the Engineering Council is a point of concern. We need to craft something about that. But also, Chair, I'm not going to be apologetic in terms of transformation needing to take place, and the transformation targets are not reached, and it's a point of concern. There's no effort being made to address transformation, to address the issues with regards to the designated groups. Instead, we are regressing in terms of the department, in terms of the entities, and we really need to craft a resolution that a recommendation that deals with that matter. I'm extremely worried, Chairperson, about the high number of the vacant positions, because even though we see a percentage-wise, it's not big. But if we see the number, the actual number of those positions, and we see the amounts attached to that number, it runs into millions and millions. In this current economic climate, Chairperson, and high unemployment, especially with regards to our youth and graduates, it can't be the case, Chairperson. We need to see those posts being filled, because every year there's just another excuse. We can't talk about COVID anymore as an excuse, Chairperson. That's the reality. We need to see the world now of senior managers to address this issue in terms of filling those funded vacant posts. Another point of concern, Chairperson, is that additional post to the establishment. I don't think it's assisting. It's a short-term relief, but we need to see full-time employment. We need to see a decrease in contracts. We need to see, Chairperson, that there's exit interviews and there's reports in terms of the quarterly presentations on what is the reason of people leaving the department and its entities. What is the strategies that they have in place in terms of retainment? What is the strategies that they have in place in terms of absorption of those contract workers? What is the plans that they have placed in terms of ensuring that they decrease the number of consultants and focus more in terms of upskilling in-house to make sure, Chairperson, that those areas can be dealt with in terms instead of having contract workers, instead of having a high number of consultants. Those are the kind of things that we really need to have recommendations on. We know that the department has, I think, a 21-day performance in terms of the payment of supplies, but it's not the same issue across the entities. That should be something that should be across the entities and being enforced. So we need a recommendation around that also. And yet again, we need to see them reporting quarterly. But also, Chairperson, I feel it's been rendered ineffective if we receive a quarterly report. For instance, we received the first quarterly report in the third quarter. It's not assisting us. So we need to move now in terms of the quarterly reports being presented to us on time, so that we can deal with the issues and monitor also the implementation of the resolutions that has been taken. Then, Chairperson, another area of concern is the backlog of candidates registering as professionals. Something needs to happen, Chairperson. I don't know how we should address this thing, but it's frustrating to have the same issue from 2019 and there's no movement. Instead, we are regressing. We see there's a concerted effort in this industry not to register candidates as professionals, because some of them might feel threatened by the incomers. But it's not fair on our country. It's not fair on those candidates. It's not fair on prospective students who wants to go into this industry. It's not fair, Chairperson. And we really need to move in terms of that issue. In terms of the Parliamentary Villages Board, I'm deeply concerned, Chairperson. From 2014, there's no they can't be audited, and we are saying things, we're making recommendations, nothing is happening. We need to alleviate it now to higher structures in terms of enforcement to see that something is happening, because now we are being failed by that parliamentary board. And otherwise, they need to be dissolved and new boards need to be put in place to perform, Chairperson. Then, Chairperson, I'm also recommending that there should be a concerted effort in terms of consequence management in terms of irregular and wasteful expenditure, fruitless expenditure, Chairperson, because I'm noting that we've been presented that there are a number of cases that can't be pursued due to the fact that people are leaving the entity or the department. They either resigning or they retire or contracts come to an end. So we need to see some faster movement in that area and put plans in place, Chairperson. They need to present to us plans on how they plan to deal with measures that they are putting in place in terms to deal with these people even after they left the department or the entities. There needs to be a way to make them accountable, because it can be correct that we are losing out and we are just taking it as normal. There's huge amounts that's attached to these areas of concern. Then, Chairperson, in terms of the leases, especially we've seen that there's a decrease in terms of the month-to-month leases, but we need to, even if there's a decrease and they're extending now the leases to 12 months and 24 months, we still see the same people benefit at the same rates as they had on the month-to-month leases. So we need proper investigation and we need that thing to be dealt with. And also, Chairperson, we've been told about the 50% of money going to the top 10 people in terms of leases, in terms of maintenance, in terms of consultants. It can't be correct. We need to correct that issue that needs to be dealt with. And even though, Chairperson, we are not sure of that 30% of SMMEs being advantaged, we need to see transformation, Chairperson, and we can't be apologetic. So those SMMEs are in the majority, they are previously disadvantaged individuals, and they need to benefit from the programs. They need to benefit from the initiatives of the department and its entities, and they need to be assisted in terms of contractor development. They need to be assisted in terms of women empowerment, especially those designated groups, so that we can see them benefiting, because that's the way that we can we need to see this economic situation in our country being turned around. Because the reality, Chairperson, is those people who's currently being advantaged in terms of their huge amounts of money, many of them are not plowing back into the economy. They are not looking at transformation targets. They are not looking at the social responsibility that they are supposed to have. And it can't be a business as usual, Chairperson. I'm not apologetic about that thing, and we need to move from that. We need to have a proper recommendation draft on that issue. Chairperson, in terms of the inflation of prices, and overcharging in terms of leases, and also in terms of that per square square meter areas, there need to be something in place that regulates that, so that there's some kind of monitoring that we perform, so that when we get to this stage next year, we'll at least see that there's some movement, and we don't see that over charging and that inflation. Then, Chairperson, my last point is in terms of the vandalization of buildings, the unused buildings that we are talking about. But we've seen in terms of Telkom Towers that even the buildings in use are being vandalized. So we need to upscale in terms of the security and safety of our buildings, and we need to do a proper assessment in terms of the buildings that we are having, both used and unused, especially the unused buildings, so that we can see if it's not possible to limit the vandalization of those buildings so that we can make use, we put plow money in so that buildings can be renovated so that we can move away from this leases that we are currently spending so much money on. I think I'll pause there for now. Thank you very much for the opportunity, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Frans Kalvik. Let me also add my voice in appreciating the report that has been presented to us, a very detailed, clear report that you presented to us, Shu'aib. So I am adding my voice in appreciating the work that you are constantly doing for the committee, yourself, Mr. Denzin, Ms. Inez, Ms. Nola Martinez, Khadija and Stabi. You really, really assisting us in this committee. Just 2 points that I feel that we have omitted them in the report. Honorable Njabo?
I'm fine, but my hands was up, but I'm covered. Thanks.
Oh, sorry. I didn't say it. I'm really sorry. On this issue of the Parliamentary Villages Board, I think that thing has been raised by the Auditor General. I think we need to say something on our recommendations. Because it has been raised by Auditor General, the issue of this board, and it has a bearing on the opinion, especially of PMTE. I think we must say something about that. I think Honorable Frans Kalvik has covered me on some of the issues that I wanted to raise. The issue of transformation in CPE, the issue of the councils, especially when it comes to registration of the new candidates. Remember when we once called them and invited those councils to present to us, they raised this, that one of the issues is that some companies don't want to take them with all the incentives that are there from government, but there are companies that don't want to take new students for registration. Two, the fact that even if you are not registered, you are allowed to work, you are allowed to do everything. It also is another factor in the decreasing number of those that are registering in the council. So they raised that. I think I agree with Honorable Frans Kalvik when she says that there ought to be something. And then this one, I think it's something that we all raised when we were in Telkom Towers, the issue of different rates, but when they are same square meters. And what is worse now, we've seen that from Auditor General, it is the same companies that are getting these leases. That on its own, it's a serious issue, but Auditor General has suggested that there needs to be an investigation when it comes to these leases. I think as this committee, we support that and would really appreciate it, though I'm not sure whether it is appearing in one of our recommendations, but that one, it must come strongly that there ought to be an investigation on the issue of the leases. As you can see, how can we lease month to month, like 10 years, month to month lease? And the issue of, Honorable Tring would put it nicely, the issue of Telkom Towers, it's clear that there's something with getting money. If we look at the leases that the police department is doing when there is a building there that has been lying there for like more than 10 years, not being utilized. Someone is getting money somewhere. So that one, it needs to come strongly that there ought to be investigation on the leases. Thank you. Over to you, Shuaib.
Thank you, Chairperson and members. I just want to share the screen. Am I audible?
Yes, you are.
Thank you, Chair. I will make the changes to, not the changes, I'll make the additions that members suggested. The Honourable Thring referred to something that I would love to do, but I cannot do it right now. And I'll do it at another stage for him. In fact, I'll do it and then send it through on our WhatsApp group once I have it done. I think he requested a breakdown. Chair, can I just ask him to just repeat that so that my memory comes back? I think it's a breakdown of the amount of...
Honourable Thring?
I just want to hear what it was you wanted to break down.
It was the irregular expenditure, and he made reference to irregular expenditure that had built up over, you know, the previous financial years, and then current irregular expenditure and what that. So my question was what the total was. So I think that there was, you know, some irregular expenditure built up, and there was a total for that, but I don't know whether we got a total of what the previous irregular expenditure, current irregular expenditure, and total. I think essentially that is what I was asking.
Perfect. Honourable Thring, I will break it down for you and then send it to you. The expenditure from 2015-16 is quite clearly there. But what I just want to get a grip on is whether it's possible for me to show how it increased, because I think you're not just asking for a breakdown of the two, but you would actually like to see how it grew and where we are standing currently. So I will do something like that and send it to you. Chair, around the other...
Thank you,
Honourable Thring. The Honourable Eklund, I... Where is it now? The Honourable Hicklin and Honourable Van Schalkwyk, their initial ones that they referred to, the village board is covered, because I don't want something to happen and then we're going to give attention to that thing. But the progress report on skills audit, Inez always raises this. I think she raised it at the strategic planning session that we had as well, that the department has promised a skills audit in the department and the PMTE for a long time. In fact, I think they do it always when they speak to us or when we raise this issue. When we raise the issue that Honorable Graham Marie raised around facilities management, because the issue around facilities management, the issue of the underspend and the issue of the real estate, the registry management, in other words, where the immovable asset register is situated. The vacancies there is in part a reason why we have a lot of overspending on consultants, on training, on archibus, and then also has a knock-on effect on lease management, where we then also overspend. In fact, the private industry probably makes a massive profit because we are not able to say what is efficient. What is a proper formula for a particular building in a particular area? A property specialist does that for you. We need across the PMTE in facilities management such people. We need people who can negotiate the best lease formula per area so that we can say we efficiently manage the property trading entity. And that we have a facilities management unit, a real estate registry unit that actually is on par with everyone else. Now, here's the challenge. The challenge is that if we, as a committee, take over the PMTE and we manage it, we stare ourselves, we'll find ourselves staring into the face of a dragon that constantly spews fumes, poisonous and burning fumes in our face. And that dragon is in fact competition for the best property specialists. Now the issue comes, do we pay these people to come in, and do we pay to retain them? And then you weigh up whether you pay them and retain them, and in that way, whether that is efficient. And I'm not certain whether we as a committee heard a strategy from the department and the PMTE on going into the market and getting the best of the best into the PMTE to manage these things for us. And I want to suggest that I craft a recommendation that covers that. I think I started doing it while Honorable von Schalkwyk was busy. Because this matter of high vacancies and underspending is linked. And we perhaps need a report on high vacancies. And then what I want to do is to say that the report should include whether there has been analysis on recruiting. Is there a recruitment strategy to get the best property specialist into the PFTE? And whether there is a retention strategy at the same time to ensure that we grow our own hood. Then on the issue of calling my brothers and sisters mafias, I have no problem with that as a starting point. But when we then want to solve the problem, we must solve the problem knowing that is not going to be constructive. That's the only thing that I'm saying. But that's not really something that we have to debate as a committee. We want a report on consultants, project managers, community liaison to deal with social unrest and the invasion of projects that causes delays and completion dates and overspending on infrastructure projects. That sentence is a bit uncomfortable for me, but I know what to do. I'll fix it. The report should deal with, firstly, the need for more effective community liaison and social facilitation. You see, just to say community liaison and social facilitation is not enough. We should speak about a type of that is effective, and it's effective as it ensures ownership of infrastructure projects. When people are displeased, they don't hate you so much that they burn down the thing that you constructed, because that's the closest they can come to hitting you. When people do that and they realize, but this is our hospital, it's our library, it's our police station, it's our road sign that we burn, I don't think they'll do it. I think this matter of unrest, social unrest, as a response to bad service delivery requires a team effort across a number of government departments. I think around construction mafias, if we call them that, which is fine, we start out like that. At another stage, we won't call them that. A report is required with SAPs on a strategy that is required across national, provincial, and local government to deal with securing and safeguarding construction projects. Because I don't think just public works reporting to us on this matter is enough. I suspect we must have COCTA, SAPS, DPWI, the agencies such as DBSA and IDT to also come and speak to us about this. Because this is not just causing the budget to swell off projects, but it's also having this other effect that once the thing is completed, so if a project is not disturbed because people want 33 1/3% or 30% of it, no matter who initiated it, no matter who initiated this thing, because it's a problem, we need to look at it as a problem now and how does it get solved? It gets solved as a unified, you need to bring all the different strands together. And then, so I'm requesting the committee to instruct me to do a recommendation that brings them all together. As I started here at 10.4.1 and 2. And then I know this matter is serious, because also the designated group targets over many years, and in some years it goes up, other years it falls down. The problem is it should drop. The performance targets are serious targets that must be started, and not just the CBE, but every single one of the entities and the department must ensure that there's a strategy that's implemented. I don't care whether it is in the APP. If the longer, the broader strategy for the 5 years means that's the percentage for designated groups, then in every APP, there must be a target stated, and by every quarter, there must be a report on that. So 10.5 should have a 1 and a 2 that then fleshes out the quarterly performance and how they report against each one of those targets. Because there's also a target in EPWP that needs to be consistently achieved, and it's not. The target around disabilities, that is 2%, is extremely low, but it never gets reached by most departments. And again, it speaks to the strategy that's not always there. High vacancies, I think I touched on it. I think I just dealt with it earlier on. High vacancies, understanding is linked, and specific programs in the department must be mentioned, and in the PMTE must be mentioned. The report on CIDB offers alleged actions by the SIU. I will do another one on I just need to put this for myself here, the preliminary investigation, because that's usually needed on lease management to process a residential up. So I will flesh that out, because lease management, the AG and in her meeting with us said that there's enough evidence to show lease management needs to be sorted out. Now lease management at all 11 regional offices, because this is the monster I referred to earlier on in the report, as this is a defragmented, we don't only have a decentralized government in terms of horizontal, but it's also vertically defragmented, and it's not just defragmented according to public law and public administration, but it's also defragmented in terms of power, and that power does include what Honorable Singh insists I should call the construction mafia, but there's also the political mafia. And I'm being naughty for saying that, but I must say, members, as politicians, you must understand that you're not the only politicians, that there are forces at play that play political games for profit. And that's a big force that is operating with sharp tools to cause disunity. They play the real power game. And that's what I mentioned in the strategic plan when I said to you, there are microeconomies around every regional office of the Public Works Department, inside the CIDB offices, across, remember, CIDB and CBE in some instances, but I know CIDB rents offices, sometimes not for payment. It's on an understanding that they use part of the regional offices across the country. And it's those hubs, including municipalities, that are the places and spaces where this power game is continuing. And yes, collusion and corruption is part of that. So I will I'm undertaking members. I'm not going to cover every single thing that you said, but I'm saying that I am going to send this through to you, just the recommendation page, within the next, just after lunchtime, you will have. Chairperson, with that, I want to sign off because, I want to put something in on the investigation into project mismanagement that led to that fruitless and wasteful expenditure at one military hospital. We need a report on that. Then a quarterly update report on the amendment of the CIDB and the CBE legislation. Update report on CIDB's progress with its change. And the issue, Honorable Singh, I thought you would jump on this one as well. The scheduled instead of ad hoc maintenance, that is also part of why we have corruption. And then the last one on procurement fraud and irregular payment, the allegations there, that's related to parliamentary villages, the transport aspect. There's also something that I will put in, if you note, Honorable Singh, this is actually the type of amount that you're requiring, that amount there, and then the 2014, the 2016 onwards one that I will dig out and see what we can do. But probably a recommendation on this as well. Chair, I want to sign off on that. Thank you.
Thank you, Shuaib. Thank you again, Honorable Members, for your deliberations and constructive one in shaping up our report. I think some of the issues that we didn't mention, Shuaib, is because they are there and return in a way that we would like them to come out strongly. Honorable Members, I now invite someone to move for the adoption of this report as our report as the Portfolio Committee.
Chair, may I just add one thing to Shuaib, if I may?
Okay.
Shuaib, you posed a question regarding the fiery dragon that could turn around and bite us in terms of the good property managers and their retention. The problem that you have is that the PMTE has the largest property portfolio. Pardon me, the largest property portfolio anywhere. And if we don't attract and retain really good property managers, we are forever going to find ourselves in a situation of being unable to manage that portfolio. So we have to look at the best way, if you'll pardon the analogy, of skinning the cat. And that may mean that we have to engage with catching or retaining, getting and retaining very expensive staff in which to do it. I mean, that is just my personal opinion. If we want that property management entity to become a property management trading entity, you have to get skilled staff that can enable such an animal to work. That's just my personal opinion. So we might need to look at acquiring such expensive staff to enable it to happen. I just think that that is one of the recommendations that we may have to put in. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Hicklin. I think Honourable Hicklin is adding on the points that Craig is going to add on the report that he will send to us by 1400 this afternoon. Can I get a mover, Honourable Members? We have to adopt this report. Okay, Honourable Njabo. Yes, Honourable Njabo.
I second the adoption of the report.
Okay, Honourable Njabo moves for the adoption of the report. Honourable Pascalvey. Honourable Pascalvey.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honorable Hans Kalvik. Honorable Hans Kalvik, yeah, has a challenge with her voice. That last week.
There was a time she was really, really sick. I think she's better now. What she is actually saying is that she's seconding the motion that we adopt the report, but with the amendments that have been raised by members, and you submit the report to us, you send the report to us by 2, as we have indicated so. Thank you, Honorable Members, for that. We now have minutes that we also need to adopt. There are minutes that were sent to us as early as last week, Honourable Members. The minutes of, is it the 23rd of September? The minutes of the 21st of September, the minutes of the 28th of September, the minutes of the 11th of October, 12th of October. The only minutes that were sent only yesterday, they were of the 13th of October. So the first set of minutes were sent earlier to us. Can we then move to that? Or, Nola, can you just flight it? I don't think there will be much discussions because we have seen these minutes. 21st September, can I get a mover for those minutes that we adopted them, Honorable Members? Honourable Joe, I need that. Honourable Joe moves that to the minutes of the 21st September. Can I get a second, Honourable Pascalvey?
I second, person.
Thank you. Ms. Martinez, please try to be fast. The minutes of the 28th of September.
I'll move, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Hicklin. The minutes of the 28th of September. May I get a second, please?
Njabo, second.
Thank you, Honourable Njabo. Minutes of the 21st and 28th September have been adopted. 11 October, last week, our marathon meeting.
I'll move, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Hicklin. The minutes of the Thank you, Honorable Van Schalkwyk. You second the motion. The minutes of the 11th of October, the minutes of the 12th October, Honorable Members. 12th October.
I move.
Thank you, Honorable. Thank you, Honorable Njobo. The minutes of the 12th October also have been adopted. And then the minutes of the 13. It's one of the meetings that at least we didn't end it at 4 or it's close to 5. Thank you, Honorable. Van Schalkwyk, Honorable Njobo, seconds the motion. So, in all, we have adopted all the minutes that we had outstanding. Thank you so much, Honorable Members. We have no plenary today, so we can't say that people will be rushing to Parliament and all that. Have an enjoyable day, the rest of your day. Thank you. Thank you to our A-team that prepared this report for us. We really appreciate it. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks, Chair. Thank you. Recording stopped.
Thanks, Chair.